This is the FCB Podcast Network. Perspective with Jeff Charles.
All right. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of A Fresh Perspective with Jeff Charles, with your favorite conservatarian, me, Jeff Charles. Got another fire episode for you today. We're going to talk about a few different things that are big in the news right now. Some might be a little bit outrageous, but I think you'll get a kick out of it. I'm going to talk about the FBI again and how it's been politicized. I'm going to talk about a questionable law that's being introduced in Virginia's state legislature, and I'm going to address this whole Alex Jones thing. I think some of you aren't going to be too fond of what I'm going to say on that, but that's okay. That's what these conversations are for. But before I go into everything, again, welcome, and be sure to subscribe if you haven't done that already. That way you'll be notified whenever I upload a new episode. Also, give me a 5-star rating on whatever podcast app you're using. 5 stars, that's going to help me out a lot. And also, leave me a comment. Leave a little bit of a review letting people know why you love this podcast so much. All right, deal? Great. Okay, so let's get into this. First, I want to talk about the FBI. And I've been talking about how the FBI is being politicized for quite a while now. And it didn't just start over the past couple years or so, right? We saw how some of their agents behaved during the 2016 presidential election, when they were found to have been spying on Donald Trump, trying to use the Steele dossier to discredit him and to discredit his election, which is interesting because they're complaining about people who questioned the 2020 election when they did the same thing with 2016. But since then, it's been pretty clear that the FBI had a thing for Trump. Like they still do. It still appears that way. I mean, they had that raid on his home a couple months ago. And, you know, we're still waiting on what's going to happen with that whole thing. Again, I'll change my mind on that if other evidence presents itself. But for all intents and purposes, it is coming off as a politically motivated endeavor on their part. But the Bureau's politicization has gone even beyond Trump. And, you know, you've also seen over the past few years, or even just recently, how they have gone after people, maybe not explicitly for their views, but for their views. And this has really come up with the issue of abortion. Ever since the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade, abortion has been a hot topic. And I'm not talking about the store, the clothing store. But over the past year, we've seen a lot of violence coming from the pro-abortion side. And we have seen a lot of bias on the part of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in how it's going after supposed crimes committed by both sides. So it is clear that at this point, they are not a neutral enforcer of federal laws. And realistically, the FBI has always been politicized, even from its inception, if I'm going to be fair. I mean, it was used against people on the left. It's been used against people on the right. It was used against black people in the civil rights movement. They were even spying on Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. So, I mean, this bureau has always had issues with corruption and political bias. But right now, we can clearly see who their targets are, which is why you've got a lot of people on the right calling for the defunding of the FBI. At least they woke up at some point. Now, if they can only apply that to state and local law enforcement as well, that'd be great. Now, I'm not talking about defund the police. I'm talking about rooting out corruption, right? So, here's what's going on. Now, as you know, the Bureau is not supposed to be engaged in partisan politics. And they definitely aren't supposed to choose which cases to take seriously based on the politics of the matter. but this is what they've done on the abortion issue. So last week, there was video footage that surfaced showing armed FBI agents arresting a man named Paul Vaughn. I believe he was in Tennessee. He's 55 years old. And he had been participating in anti-abortion protests. So he's a pro-lifer. And when you're looking at the footage, you can hear a woman, probably his wife, asking the agents why they were banging on her door with guns and asking them to explain why they were arresting this man, and the agents refused to answer. Now, Vaughn was just one of 11 pro-lifers who are being indicted in Tennessee because they allegedly blocked access to an abortion clinic in the state. And this occurred during a protest in March. Not March of this year, March of 2021. That's right. They arrested these people and they are indicting them for something that they did in March last year. Now, this is apparently our esteemed FBI doing yeoman's work and keeping us safe by taking these dangerous pro-life protesters off the streets. I mean, imagine how many lives have been saved because these people are being hauled to jail. And again, Vaughn was only one of these individuals. The others got a not-so-friendly visit from armed FBI agents as well. Okay. Now, I know that there are laws in most states against blocking access to abortion facilities. It's not against the law to protest. The First Amendment protects that. But I guess you're not allowed to prevent people from entering physically. Now, I don't know the details of all these cases, and I'm not sure whether they actually broke the law or not. But the idea that you wait over a year, like a year and a half, to effect an arrest, and it just comes off a little bit suspicious to me, especially given the fact that we have seen a lot of political bias coming from the Bureau. Now, meanwhile, remember all those firebombings and acts of vandalism that pro-abortion activists have been perpetrating against pro-life organizations like crisis pregnancy centers, advocacy groups, churches? They've been firebombing them. They've been vandalizing and destroying the parts of these buildings. And so far, they haven't escalated to targeting humans, but that is the only logical conclusion, especially if nothing is done about it. And speaking of which, the FBI has not arrested a single person in connection with these acts of violence and vandalism. Not a single one. In fact, they aren't even talking about it. So I read an article, I believe this was in the Daily Signal, and the Wisconsin Family Action. This is a group that is a pro-life. It was one of the first to be vandalized. And it happened shortly after the draft opinion coming from the Supreme Court was leaked to the public, basically saying that they were going to overturn Roe v. Wade. So they firebombed the place, and they even spray-painted a message on one of the walls. It said, quote, "If abortions aren't safe, then you aren't either." Now, this was done by a pro-abortion, in my opinion, domestic terrorist group called Jane's Revenge. They took credit for it, and also for several other acts of vandalism. They posted some of these things online. They also reached out to a journalist named Robert Evans, who is a lefty, but he basically just relayed the message that they sent to him. I'm not saying he condones this. And by the way, he's got a great podcast called Behind the Bastards. You should check that out. If you're a conservative, you won't agree with the political views, but it's very educational, very interesting. Anyway, but I digress. Yes, I just plugged a left-wing podcast, but it's great. So anyway, Jane's Revenge, in their message, they said that this was, quote, just a warning, and they promised more violence. They said, quote, "We demand the disbanding of all anti-choice establishments, fake clinics, and violent anti-choice groups within the next 30 days. And they've carried out other acts of violence. And they're not the only ones. There are other pro-abortion activists who are carrying out these acts. And I'll get to the numbers in a second. But the FBI showed up after the firebombing. The ATF showed up as well. And, you know, they looked around, did their thing. And since they left, they've said nothing about it. So Jelaine Appling, she's the president of Wisconsin Family Council. And she told the Daily Signal that she has heard, quote, nothing from the FBI after they left our office on the day of the attack, May 8th. Now, she said she wasn't sure whether the FBI or ATF took pictures of the scene because they were behind closed doors all day long. And she said that she has also never received anything in writing. Now, she did say that the Bureau called one time to check on a phone number, and that was mid to late May. And then she said, quote, crickets since then. Now, in another Daily Signal report, the author noted that, quote, the Federal Bureau of Investigation will not share whether it has made any arrests related to attacks on pro-life centers, organizations, and Catholic churches following the leak of the Supreme Court opinion overturning Roe v. Wade. Now, the report said at least 83 Catholic churches and 73 pregnancy resource centers or pro-life organizations have been attacked since the draft opinion was leaked in May. So that's over 100. And these centers and organizations have also told the Daily Signal that they haven't heard anything from federal authorities on the matter. There are no updates, no questions, no nothing. It's a wall of silence coming from the Bureau. Now, the FBI released a statement to the Daily Signal that, ironically enough, was basically the same statement that they issued to the Daily Wire on this matter. And it said that it is investigating, quote, a series of attacks and threats targeting pregnancy resource centers, faith-based organizations, and reproductive health clinics across the country, as well as two judicial buildings, including the U.S. Supreme Court. They said they, quote, take all violence and threats of violence very seriously and is working closely with our law enforcement partners at the national, state, and local levels to investigate these incidents. Yeah, I'm going to call BS. I'm calling BS on this. These are lies. They are lying and the truth ain't in them. Here's my thing. This is the Federal Bureau of Investigation that we're talking about here. We're not talking about some small law enforcement agency in a podunk rural area of the country. Not trying to, you know, disrespect them, but I'm just saying the FBI, this is the federal government of these here United States of America. This agency has a near unlimited supply of resources that it could bring to bear on this matter. Look at how easily they rounded up the people who were involved in the January 6th riots at the U.S. Capitol building. There were thousands of people in that area. And they managed to track so many of these people down from different states, different localities, and they were able to round them up. There's no reason why they haven't been able to make a single arrest, not even one person, in connection with these crimes. Now, I can understand that they had gotten some people, and then maybe not others. I mean, I don't expect them to be perfect. But if they were actually trying to find out who was carrying this stuff out, with the resources they have, they could have found some people. Come on now. I mean, it's interesting because they're prioritizing this supposed threat of white supremacy because that's what they've been trying to sell us on. And whistleblowers are saying that they're cooking the numbers on that to categorize cases as white supremacist violence or white supremacist cases that don't really have much to do with white supremacy. They have even, according to these whistleblowers, they have allegedly allocated agents and resources from child abuse cases and put it towards finding, rooting out these threats of white supremacist violence, ostensibly to justify their claim that domestic extremism coming from the right is the biggest threat to national security, because that's what they've been claiming over the past few years. And it sounds like they're not coming up with a whole lot. The demand is more than the supply, it seems. I'm not saying that there's no white supremacist violence. We saw what happened in Buffalo, New York, and in other cases too. So I'm not saying there's absolutely none, but I am not convinced that there is enough to say to make the claim that this is some dire threat to national security. Now again, I'm willing to be proven wrong if other evidence comes up, but I've been waiting, and it hasn't happened, right? So, to put it simply, these people are lying. They are not interested in dealing with the people who are responsible for this violence and vandalism. They're not making an effort, but they have all the time in the world to go after these pro-life protesters from last March who may or may not have been blocking an entryway to an abortion clinic. And we don't even know if they actually physically stopped people from going in. I'm suspecting they didn't. But these folks could be, I don't know what the punishment is for it. So I don't know if this is punishable by prison or by a fine or something like that. But the fact of the matter is our federal government is devoting resources to these people when there are others who are actually engaging in acts of violence. I'm glad that they haven't gone after people yet. But there's already an instance of a person, of an old woman being shot because of an argument over abortion. She was handing out pamphlets that was encouraging people to go against a measure in her state that would have supported abortion, which is her right to do that. And she got shot. Now, it wasn't by one of these groups, but whatever. I mean, it's only going to be a matter of time before they escalate, especially since a lot of these laws have been going into effect in red states that are restricting abortion. But here's the thing. Well, what can be done about it? I mean, the GOP would have to hold the FBI accountable when they have enough power. I'm sure they're going to take the House, possibly even the Senate, but even then, are they going to have enough influence to actually do something about this? I'm not sure that they will. I mean, we might have to wait until there's another Republican president in the White House in 2024, because that would be under his purview. I mean, whether that's Trump or someone else, that's what's going to have to happen. And until then, we're just going to have to deal with the FBI being corrupt. And I hate to say it, but it's true. I mean, I'm glad that a lot of this stuff is getting out there. I'm glad that these whistleblowers are coming forward. There's a lot of scandals going on at the Bureau. Maybe I'll do a segment on that one day, just all the stuff that's been happening with these whistleblowers, because I've been writing about it, but I haven't, you know, talked about it verbally yet. So that's the latest on what your FBI is up to, dear listener. I'll leave it there for right now, but I know that there will be more. But until then, I'll see you on the flip side. Stay tuned.
These days, it seems like everybody's talking, but no one is actually listening to the things they're saying. Critical thinking isn't dead, but it's definitely low on oxygen. Join me, Kira Davis, on Just Listen to Yourself every week as we reason through issues big and small, critique our own ideas, and learn to draw our talking points all the way out to their logical conclusions. Subscribe to Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis and FCB Radio Podcast on Apple, on Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to A Fresh Perspective. Willkommen, come and see. Thanks for hanging with me. Appreciate all of my listeners. And in this segment, I'm going to talk about a little something going on in Virginia, which has kind of been a ground zero of sorts when it comes to the debate over transing children and the problematic stuff that they're trying to teach in K-12 classrooms. It's where a lot of the protest has taken place. I mean, it's been going on all over the country, but the issue was pretty egregious when it comes to Loudoun County, Virginia. And as you know, Republican was elected governor Glenn Youngkin back in November of last year. And he's been following through on his promises to deal with these issues, to stop these school districts from trying to indoctrinate children into far leftist progressive, so-called progressive ideology when it comes to issues like race or sexuality or gender identity. And so he has been implementing some policy in that regard. And of course, the Democrats in the state aren't too happy about it. And it's funny, I actually just got done talking about this on Victory News. You should check out my appearances there. I'll put them up on my YouTube channel, I suppose. But I saw this story yesterday. It was actually sent to me by Ian Pryor, who is a senior advisor for America First Legal. He's also part of a group called Citizens for Sanity. This guy wears a lot of hats, but he sent me the story. And you know what? I wasn't surprised by it. As a matter of fact, I've been warning about it over the past more than a year or so. And now they're making another push for this. So let's get into the story. Let's get into this. And I actually wrote an article about this on redstate.com. And it's not even in the behind the paywall, so you can go and read it at your leisure. But you still should, you know, subscribe to Red State, because you can read all my VIP articles where I put my deepest, most, innermost, intimate thoughts. Anyway, all right, I'll stop goofing off. So a Virginia lawmaker, she's part of the House of Delegates, which is, I guess, kind of like their House of Representatives. Her name is Elizabeth Guzman. And if she gets her way, parents who do not affirm their child's sexual orientation or gender identity, like if they're dealing with gender dysphoria, if they do not affirm these things to the extent that she wants them to, they could face felony or misdemeanor charges if this woman gets her way. Now, Elizabeth Guzman is a social worker, but she's also a part of the legislature, the state legislature. And she reintroduced a bill, because she did this in 2020 the first time, and it didn't go anywhere, but she's trying again. And this bill is ostensibly designed to protect LGBTQ children from their evil parents who may not affirm their choices when it comes, again, to their sexuality and gender identity. Here's what the measure would do. It would expand the state's definition of child abuse to include parents who are not in alignment with progressive viewpoints on these matters, sexuality, gender identity. So she had an interview with ABC 7 News, a local news affiliate, and she said, quote, "If the child shares with those mandated reporters what they are going through, we are talking about not only physical abuse or mental abuse. What the job of that mandated reporter is to inform Child Protective Services." Right? You know, we just had some whack job left-wing media activists try to call CPS on a candidate running for office in a different state, I believe, because she was supposedly teaching her child how to be a racist because she said Happy Columbus Day. We already know that these people want to use the government against parents who don't deal with their children the way the government says they should. Now, Guzman continued. She says, quote, "And then that's how everybody gets involved. There's also an investigation in place that is not only from a social worker, but there's also a police investigation before we make the decision that there is going to be a CPS charge." So what she wants to do is make it easier for these school districts to enforce their ideology, not just on the child, but also on the parents. Because right now the school districts can't do anything to the parents. Now they can lie to them. They can help their children transition to the opposite gender, supposedly, because that's not possible. But they can do this without the parents' knowledge. If the kid says that they don't want their parents to know, they won't tell them. And they'll even lie to them. They'll use the kid's birth name and birth pronouns in front of the parents. And then once the parents are gone, they'll use the child's chosen name and chosen pronouns. So there's a lot of deception involved here. But this bill, if passed, would give them even more teeth, because they can say, oh, well, parent, you're not affirming your kid's gender ideology or your kid's chosen gender. It looks like you're going to get a visit from CPS and the police, right? That's what this is intended to do. Now, when Guzman was asked what the penalties would be if the authorities determined that a parent is not affirming enough of their LGBTQ child, that's when Guzman said that it could be a felony or a misdemeanor. So she said, quote, "Well, we first have to complete an investigation. It could be a felony, it could be a misdemeanor, but we know that CPS could harm your employment, could harm their education, because nowadays many people do a CPS database search before offering employment." Now then, I don't think that these are the only consequences that she wants. But this is bad enough, isn't it? That you would harm somebody's ability to get an education or employment because they don't believe in the LGBTQ ideas that the progressives want them to believe in. But it's none of their business, right? I'll get to that in a second. Let's just keep going through the story. And you guys already know how I feel about it, but I'll lay it out a little bit better. The interviewer also asked this state delegate about critics who say that this bill would essentially criminalize parents. And then the reporter asked how she would respond to that criticism. She said, quote, "No, it's not. It's educating parents because the law tells you the do's and don'ts. So this law is telling you do not abuse your children because they are LGBTQ. Now, here's the thing. Virginia already has laws on the books to prevent child abuse. So regardless of the reason as to why you're abusing your child, you can still be prosecuted. You can still, the authorities will still deal with you, which they should, if you're actually abusing your child. But again, what Guzman is trying to do here is expand the definition of the term child abuse to include things that aren't necessarily abuse. But this isn't about abuse. This is, again, about progressives enforcing their ideology. See, they don't work through persuasion, right? We know this. Progressives, the hard left, does not try to get their way through persuasion, through having conversations, because they know their ideas suck. So they have to do it through force. That's why they're all about censorship. That's why they're okay with the fact that the Biden administration is working with companies to suppress conservative views online. It's why they shout down speakers on college campuses who don't agree with them. It's why they try to cancel anybody who expresses a point of view that they don't like. And it's also why they want to use the government as much as they possibly can to force their ideas on the rest of the nation. And this is just yet another attempt to do that. Now, the reporter also brought up the First Amendment protections related to religious freedom, right? Congress shall not pass any laws infringing on the right to practice one's religion, right? Here was her response to that. This isn't funny. I'm not laughing because it's funny, but here's her response. The Bible, she says, quote, okay. Quote, "The Bible says to accept everyone for who they are. So that's what I tell people when they ask me that question. And that's what I will continue to tell people. You know, we all have a commitment to God. And for those believers out there, we know that there's life after life. And there's going to be a conversation between that person and God. And that's what we're after, to go by what the Bible says. It is not my job to judge anyone. It is my job to help people and to possibly threaten them with jail time and not being able to get employment if they don't do what I say." Okay, I may or may not have added that last part. But the rest, she actually said this. Tell me that you don't read the Bible without telling me that you don't read the Bible. That's what she's doing here. I mean, and if you're a Christian and you're listening to this, you already know the counter to this argument, right? Yes, you do. God calls us to love people. That doesn't mean that we have to accept everything that they do, right? I mean, there's nowhere in the Bible where it says that. And there's definitely nothing in the Bible that says you should be threatening people with the police because they don't raise their kids the way you want them to. Again, there's a difference between abuse and what we're actually talking about here. Now, I actually pulled up the law itself. And I pulled up the passage that she wants to add because it goes through all the different criteria that defines what child abuse is under Virginia law. And this is what she would be adding on. It would define the term as behavior that, quote, creates or inflicts, threatens to create or inflict, or allows to be created or inflicted upon such child a physical or mental injury on the basis of the child's gender identity or sexual orientation. But again, if you read that law, it already disallows this. You cannot abuse your child in Virginia. There are laws against that, regardless of the reason why you're doing it. But again, she's expanding the definition because she wants to include parents that aren't necessarily abusing their kids, but they're not. But if they have a daughter named Sally, they don't approve of him or of her saying, "Okay, now my name is Sam," and I don't mean Samantha. I mean like Samuel, the dude's name. Yeah. All right. So here now. Obviously, there are people taking issue with this, and I reached out to a few different people. Nicole Neely, president of Parents Defending Education, which is a great organization to support. It's a parental rights advocacy group, and they have filed a bunch of lawsuits against a lot of the stuff that's being taught in schools, whether it's on race or sexuality or gender identity. And they've been winning, actually. So they're doing very good work. So I spoke with Nicole Neely, who I've actually had on this podcast twice now. You can check those out on my YouTube channel. Same name, A Fresh Perspective with Jeff Charles. And she told me, quote, "Regardless of what Delegate Guzman may believe, Virginia parents have a fundamental right to direct the upbringing of their children, and we have no intention of surrendering those rights to her or any other education bureaucrat." I have a feeling that she may have wanted to say something else there, but she, you know, you gotta be, you know, politically correct. She's gotta be diplomatic. But she's right. She's right. This is nothing more than trying to interfere with the way parents raise their children. So that shouldn't be surrendered. And that's the thing. And that's really what this is about. This is about parental rights. And I'll get to that in a second. I also spoke with Ian Pryor, the person who sent me the story. Again, he's a senior advisor at America First Legal. I've had him on my program twice. Check that out on my YouTube channel. This guy, I mean, the stuff that he brings up is stuff that, you know, is that we need to know about. I'll say that. And he said, quote, "As shocking and evil as this is, it is not surprising. Schools in Virginia are keeping parents out of the loop when their children tell staff that they want to identify as a different sex. The very reason schools are doing this is because they believe that parents' failure to affirm is abuse." And that is the crux of the matter. See, to these people, abuse isn't slapping your kid, punching your kid, verbally abusing them, calling them all kinds of names, tearing them down every day. They don't believe that that's all that child abuse is. And of course, there's more to it than that. I'm not trying to, you know, downplay child abuse here. That's not what's going on. But they believe that if you don't think that your daughter named Myra should become Manny, that's abuse right there. That alone is abuse. Even if you're still loving on your kid. And I've talked to mothers who have gone through this. Gabrielle Clark. Her daughter's school tried to pull this crap on her, tried to encourage her to believe that she was really a boy. And Gabby had to go through a whole process to get her out of that. And she ended up having to move to a different state. And now she's a big activist on this stuff. She was just in Anaheim protesting. And she's very active on social media. And guess what Twitter did today? They suspended her account. Again, progressives don't work by persuasion because their ideas suck. They go through force. But I digress. Ian Pryor also said that this bill is a natural progression from what the woke left is pushing. And he said, make no mistake, they will lose this fight. Politicians that push it will be defeated. Organizations that try to separate children from caring parents will be prosecuted and sued. The sick and twisted agenda of these activists will be a relic of the past, and they will join the ranks of history's villains. And he's right. But even if we're looking at the here and now, Guzman's bill is not going to get passed. It's just not going to happen. She's going to lose. And she probably knows it. Even Democrats have come out against it. Representative Abigail Spanberger, and I'll give you a little bit of tea on her. She's a Democrat, and she said this bill will be dead in the water. She didn't agree with it. She didn't think that this was a good idea. But one of her surrogates, and I wrote about this too the other day, just the other day I wrote about this. One of her surrogates was at a meeting at somebody's home and said the quiet part out loud and said that he believes that children whose parents don't affirm their gender identity should be removed from the home. They want to take your kids away, guys. I'm not exaggerating. He actually said this. These people want to remove your children. But why? Because it's a fundamental difference in thinking between progressives and sane people. And I specifically say progressives because I think that most people who vote Democrat would agree with you and I on this. They would. See, the thing is, these people, again, they don't think your kids belong to you. They believe that your children should belong to the state. And you're just caretakers. That's what they, if they had their way, if they could have, if they could wave a magic wand and have their way tomorrow, that is exactly what society would look like. The government would be raising your children. And you can kind of just be a caretaker, but you have to do it the way they tell you to do it. Otherwise, they'll throw you in jail or they will send CPS to your home. It's evil. It is nothing less than wicked. But here's this is why I talk about this so much. I mean, don't think that I don't get sick of talking about this. The only reason, I'll walk that back. I don't get sick of talking about it because it's too important. But don't think that I don't that I like having to talk about this in the first place. I should be able to talk about policy and other stuff, you know, immigration. And I do, but I talk about this issue so much because it is that important. Like I've always said, like I said on the last episode, this is one of the biggest issues that the country is facing that nobody knows about. So I'm trying to do my part to expose it as much as possible. And I've got, there are other people doing it too. Brandon Showalter at the Christian Post. Him and I became friends recently over this issue. He's been on my podcast twice. I met him in person a few weeks ago here in Austin. But there are a lot of other people who are pushing back against this because this isn't just about transing the kids, although that's bad enough. This is about what they want to, their end goal, to control as much as your life as possible, to control your parenting. Imagine that. That is what these people want. So yes, this bill is going to get slapped down. Yes, sure. But we should not assume that this is not going to come back. Because it is. This is the end goal of what they want. If anything, we can look at this as a test run. Because again, she knows that this bill is not going to pass. And they are bent on pushing their gender ideology on the rest of the public, regardless of how we feel about it. If they have to threaten you with criminal penalties or use the state to kidnap your children, because that is what they would be doing, then so be it. This is yet another reason why we have to squash this crap as soon as possible. We've got to squash it in the culture, in society, at the with legislation. We need a full court press on this. Because if we don't, we're going to have even more casualties. And we've already got enough as it is. And we're going to see more of these in the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. We're going to see more people who got transitioned that want to go back. And we're going to even see people, and I hate to say it, who may have committed suicide because they took puberty blockers or women who or girls who got their breasts cut off at 12, 13 years old because they thought that that would fix their mental health. I could go on about this, but I'll leave it right there for right now. Give us a second. I'm going to pay some bills, and I will be right back.
This is Darvio Kingpin Morrow, co-host of the Outlaws Radio Show. And if you haven't heard our show before, check out this clip.
J.D. Vance.
One of the things I think we have to do on the Republican side, because we've got the white working class, and I think we've got them solid, is start to attract, you know, the Black and I guess now the Latino working class into our coalition. Because I think if we do that and we serve those voters well, I mean, we could become the majority party in this country for a generation if we actually see the opportunity. And you know, what I tell a lot of my friends, you know, who are a little older than I am, I'm 37 years old. A lot of them say, well, you know, we really want to get back to country club set in the Republican Party. And I say, look, at the end of the day, like, we're going to be a stronger party if we accept that the country club set maybe is never coming back, but we acquire some of those Black and Hispanic working class voters into our coalition. Like, let the country club set go, you know, let them use their preferred pronouns and obsess about racial issues and gender issues, because they're all crazy. And I think that this is something that actually unites a lot of working class white and Black folks, is we just want to live in a country where we don't have to obsessively worry about everything that we say.
Subscribe to the Outlaws Radio Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's OUTLAWS, The Outlaws Radio Show, and FCB Radio Podcast.
All right, y'all. Welcome on back to this final segment of A Fresh Perspective with Jeff Charles. Thank you so much for listening. I am grateful for all of y'all. You guys are awesome. And just want to remind you, please subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. And give me a 5-star rating on whatever podcast app that you're using. I really appreciate any and all support. And if you have 10 seconds, because that's how long this takes, just leave me a few sentences of a comment or a review letting people know why you love this podcast. All of those things help me out immensely, especially with the algorithms, especially if you're a communist and you're listening to this on an Apple device and you're using Apple Podcasts to listen to this podcast. I'm just kidding. I'm fine with you Apple people. I just prefer Android. All right. Okay. Now don't leave. Come back. We can all get along. We can all coexist with one another. All right. Okay. So speaking of other unpopular opinions, let's talk about Alex Jones and what I think of this whole case, because it ain't going to be popular. Well, I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm underestimating it. But here's the thing. You know, you've probably already heard the news. Alex Jones lost yet another court case after being sued for defamation for comments, deceptive comments, lies that he told about the mass shooting in Sandy Hook at an elementary school. And he's been sued by a bunch of different plaintiffs, and, you know, some in Texas, some in other states. This one was in Connecticut, and it involved some of the parents and other relatives of some of the kids who died there. And, you know, he lost the case, obviously, but the judge awarded almost $1 billion to the plaintiffs that Alex Jones has to pay. Now, before I get into the rest of this, I'm just going to start out by saying, for those who say that $1 billion is too much, it's excessive, I agree with you. I do. I mean, what he did was horrible. I'm not going to downplay what he did because it was disgusting. So I think I'm only going to make people angry if you think that it was okay what he did. But what he did was wrong, in my opinion, and obviously in the opinion of the jury. But $1 billion, come on now. First off, the dude's not going to pay $1 billion. He doesn't have $1 billion, and he's never going. Well, I don't know. Maybe at some point he will, but he's not going to have $1 billion. So the families aren't going to get that. I think this was done to send a message, and it's not a very good one. I think this could have been politically motivated, just like, you know, because everything that we look at has to be viewed through a political lens. It can't just be whether this is right or wrong. It has to be whether this is right or left, right? Hey, I just coined a new phrase. I'm going to use that more often. In this situation, it's not about what's right or wrong. It's about what's right or left. Yes. All right. You know, see, I come up with this stuff without even trying to. But I digress. Anyway, let's get into this. So, yeah, I agree with what I'm about to say isn't really directed at the people. Well, it's directed at everybody. But I agree that almost $1 billion is excessive. That's way too much. But he does deserve at least still most of what he's getting. But here's the reason I'm talking about this. And I was going to write an article about it, but I don't know. I still might. But the reason I wanted to talk about this is because it brings up an opportunity to kind of educate a little bit on the subject of defamation. And I was talking about this on Twitter last night, and I realized that a lot of people don't really know how defamation law works. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an attorney. But I am a journalist. So I have to understand how these laws work. And there are differences depending on what state you're in. But even before I became a journalist, when I used to do a lot of freelance writing, for law firms. And defamation was one of the things that I had to write about. So I got very familiar with the topic. So I'm not a lawyer, I'm not pretending to be, but I do have at least a rudimentary understanding of how defamation works as it relates to tort law. And when you look at this case, you can see that it fits. It does fit. And people are, claiming that this is a free speech issue or a First Amendment issue, but it's not. See, the First Amendment does not protect defamation. And you know, if you're listening to this, you probably already know the First Amendment doesn't protect all speech. It protects most speech. It protects way more speech than other countries are granting to their citizens or protecting for their citizens. But defamation is one of those things that you can't do. And again, a lot of people aren't really familiar with what defamation is and how it works. So I want to talk about this because these are issues that affect other prominent news stories as well. You look at Nick Sandman with the Covington kids who were defamed basically by CNN and other activist media outlets and portrayed as racist, and Nick Sandman sued. And, you know, a lot of those outlets had to settle. I don't think any of them actually went to trial, but he was suing him for defamation because of what they did to him. And, you know, and then the activist media does this to a lot of people, but not everybody has the wherewithal or the resources to file lawsuits. I wish they did, because a lot of people were doing the whataboutism thing. Well, what about when the media lied about this or that? Oh, you know what? I'm not a fan of whataboutism, but you're right. I mean, and media outlets have been sued for defamation successfully before, but I don't think it happens nearly enough. I would advocate for making it easier to hold these outlets accountable. And I don't care if it's left-wing or right-wing. If it's Fox News and they lie about somebody, they should be held to account, because that's not something that we should be encouraging in our media outlets. But I digress again. So let's get into this. Let's get into Alex Jones. So when it comes to speech, you have the right to criticize people. You have the right to criticize your government. You have the right to criticize, I don't know, Lizzo or Brad Pitt. You can criticize your neighbor. You can say what you want. And let me scroll down here. And basically, if it's defamation, there are a few different types of criteria. So let me just define the term really quick. And this is coming from a website called NOLO. I've gone there many times to understand the legalities of various issues, defamation being one of them. So the defamation occurs when an individual makes a false statement. It has to be false, verbally or in writing, about someone else that damages that person's reputation. And like I said earlier, these laws are different from state to state, but there is still the basic principle of defamation. It is a statement that you make, a false statement. It has to be false, again, whether it's verbal or written. If it's written, then it's referred to as libel. So if I write an article and I make something up about some politician I don't like, and it's clearly false, and, well, I'm getting ahead of myself, then that's libel. But if I say something on my podcast or on a YouTube video, that is slander, right? So a plaintiff suing for defamation, in order to bring the case and have a chance of winning, all of the things that I'm about to list have to be true. All of these criteria must be met to have a chance of winning a defamation suit. The first criteria is that the defendant or the person who was accused published a statement about the plaintiff. Two, the statement was false. Three, the statement was injurious. Four, the statement was not privileged. So let's go with the first one, published. Now, this doesn't mean that it has to be in a magazine or a newspaper or a book. It just has to be said or written in a way that the public could hear it. So again, if I say something on my podcast and people listen to it, then it's published. If I go out in front of somebody's store and start yelling about how the owner is racist when they're not, or that they engaged in racial crimes or racial discrimination, and people heard it walking by or maybe it held a sign, that's published. So it can be on TV, anywhere, at a town hall, speech, meeting, or even at a, the site says even at during cocktail party chatter. So let's go to the second one, false. The statement has to be false. Only false statements of fact can be defamatory. Note, statements of fact. That doesn't mean opinion. Like, here's a statement of opinion. Rosario Dawson is the finest actress in the world. Now, I would say that's a fact, but I mean, people might disagree with that. So it would be classified as opinion. I still think it's objectively true, though. But anyway, that is a statement of opinion. A statement of fact would be something like Joe Blow stole Maria's watch. I saw him do it, or I heard that he did it, and I know for a fact that he did it. That's a factual statement. So even if you're saying something really horrible about somebody, like I think Eric Swalwell is a jerk. I think he looks like Dexter. I think he's not very bright. That's a matter of opinion. He can't sue me for defamation for that, because they can't be proven to be objectively false. That's what the site says. And in Eric Swalwell's case, it'd be very hard to prove that what I just said is objectively false. So three, the statement has to be published. It has to be false. But number three, it has to be injurious. So if I make a statement and I publish it and it's false, but it's not injurious, then you might not have a case against me. The state must be injurious. This means that it caused some type of harm. So, for example, the site says a defamatory statement is injurious if it, for example, gets you fired from your job or causes you to lose customers if you have a business, losing income, or maybe causes you to lose friends and family members, damages your reputation and damages your relationships. That also counts. Or maybe it leads to you being harassed online. And this is going to come into play in Alex Jones's case. So one guy I was talking to, he was under the impression that this only applies if you lose money. It can, but it does. But it's not limited to monetary loss, right? So the last one. Okay, no. Actually, let me give you some other examples. So examples of statements that these can include examples of statements that falsely claim that somebody committed a crime or has an infectious disease or has done something unethical. You know, those types of things could be if you use statements of facts related to those and they're false and they cause injury, then there might be a case there. And the last one is not privileged. So privileged statements basically are statements made during judicial proceedings by, you know, government officials or maybe by legislators who are engaging in debate in Congress, stuff like that. That stuff is privileged, so it can't be privileged statements. I'm not really sure why that is, but whatever. That's one of the criteria. If it fulfills all of those criteria, you know, the statement is published, it is false, it is injurious, and it's not privileged, that's where you have a case. And again, the injury does not have to just be monetary. Now then, let's look at Alex Jones. Now, I'm not going to go over every single lie that he told, but I'll give you just a broad overview just for those who aren't familiar with the case. But after the Sandy Hook mass shooting happened, Alex Jones on his InfoWars website and some of the journalists that work with InfoWars, he spread the lie that the families whose kids had died, or relatives, because there were teachers who died in that attack too, he said that they were actors who had faked the death of their relatives. And he stated this repeatedly on his program as if it were fact. And he repeated these lies until 2020. And I believe the shooting happened in 2018. I mean, he was saying things like these kids were crisis actors, that these kids were still alive. Like, the parents had to listen to this guy tell his followers that their kids were still alive when they weren't. And not only that, he told his viewers that these families were in on this conspiracy to promote gun control. Because, you know, every time there's a mass shooting, people on the right says, oh, that wasn't an organic event. That was done by the government to promote gun control. Because there's no way that somebody can just go nuts and just shoot up a place. It has to be a government red flag event. Or, am I using the right term? No, it's a... I can't remember. Whatever. You know what I'm saying. So that's the type of conspiracy theory he was circulating. And again, he was stating this as if it were fact. And obviously this wasn't true. These were lies. So we've got published statements that he said on InfoWars. So they were published. They were false because everybody knows that this shooting really happened. It wasn't the government. There's absolutely no evidence that the government pulled this off. The guy who did it killed himself. So we don't have his testimony. And these kids are dead. I mean, that's just what it is. These kids died. And this wasn't a hoax. This wasn't staged. Those kids are not alive, like Alex Jones said. These parents were not a part of a conspiracy. So his statements were false. Now, let's get to the injuries. And there were a lot of them that I'm not even going to list because I couldn't even find them all. But there were a lot of injuries here. So in one case, some parents said that because of what Jones was telling his followers, their family was being harassed online and in person and forced to move. And Jones had previously implied by name in some of these cases that these parents were paid to pretend that she was grieving her six-year-old son's death. Yeah, that's how disgusting he got with this. So he continued to spread these rumors. Other families said that they got death threats online, in person, being harassed. A lot of these families had to move multiple times, 10 times in one case. You know, one of them had their, you know, the grave of their son that died. They couldn't even visit it because people might be there to attack them because they think they're part of this conspiracy. In one case, somebody even peed on the grave of one of the kids who died because he thought it was okay because the kid was really alive and this was all a scam. It was all a hoax. These people have been accosted on the street by people, harassed on the street. And even moving didn't help because they would move and then these people would publish the address again. Now, I'm not saying Alex Jones published the address. I don't think he went that far, but his followers did. So his lies caused this harassment to happen. That's injury right there. I mean, and even if you're looking at it from a monetary perspective, how much does it cost to move 10 times within a short time period? We're in 2022, so I don't know exactly when they stopped having to move, but let's just say it was the 4 years, 2018 to 2022, you have to move 10 times because these... I wish Darvio would let me cuss on this platform, but I can't, I get it. But because these people decided to harass them and to put them through all types of anguish because of what Alex Jones did. And obviously his statements were not privileged. So it fit all of those criteria, which again is why Alex Jones deserves most of what he's getting. I have no sympathy for him whatsoever. These were not statements of opinion. They were statements of fact. And by the way, it doesn't require intent. Like if you say something that is untrue about somebody else and they're not a public figure, because the rules are kind of different when you're a public figure, the burden of proof is higher. In that case, it does have to be malicious. But even if it's not malicious, you can still be sued if you're a regular person. So that's why Jones is going through what he's going through. This isn't some plot by the government. As much as I love to call out the government, that's not what this is. What Alex Jones did was wrong. There's no way to, there's really no way to defend it. Again, I agree that almost $1 billion is steep. But as far as the other, because he's lost other cases where he's, you know, it's been millions of dollars. I'm sorry, he deserves what he's getting. I have no sympathy for him. I know a lot of people like him. But again, I'm not looking at this through a political lens. You know my motto, principles over politics, right? My principle is if you violate these laws and you get sued and you end up having to pay up, that's your fault. You know, take personal responsibility, right? So that's, I wanted to go over this because a lot of people are defending Alex Jones. And, you know, again, this isn't really for the people who just think that the punishment is too high, but it's for people who think that he's being punished for free speech, that this is a violation of the First Amendment. And I'm here to say this is not a violation of the First Amendment because the First Amendment does not protect defamation. Now, you might think that it should. And that could be another, that would be a very interesting debate, a very interesting conversation. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't. You can't defame somebody and get away with it unless they choose not to sue you. So I'm going to leave it there for right now. I could go on and on about this, but yeah, I'll just leave it there. I mean, I'm sure I'll get some responses to this that I'll have to respond to later, but that's okay. But again, I appreciate everybody for listening. Appreciate you sticking with me. And again, so subscribe if you haven't already. Leave me a 5-star rating and a review. And until next time, I will catch you on the flip side.
This has been a presentation of the FCB Podcast Network, where real talk lives. Visit us online at fcbpodcasts.com.